Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I am Jason Stein.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at the Capitol this week. I want to thank Jason Stein, a Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, for filling in for the vacationing J.R. Ross. Welcome, man.
Pleasure to be here. Thank
you. As usual, we run Wisconsin, I wish I was there, which is a compendium of some of the sights and sounds, all the places we were. So let's get those very interesting videos out of the way right now.
The American Health Care Act really hurts older people, poor people, and sick people, who are the people who most need health insurance, right?
Last fall, Gallup asked, how much trust and confidence do you have in the local governments in the area where you live to handle local problems? 71% of respondents said they had a great deal or fair amount of confidence in their local governments. 71%.
Full repeal of the prevailing wage laws in Wisconsin could cost Wisconsin taxpayers $336 million annually.
Because this is Facebook Live, I want to ask a question from someone in Eau Claire. How do you feel about LGBTQ youth? I'm a member of the Eau Claire School Board. Do you walk back your comments knowing that our inclusion has worked well in Eau Claire?
Look, I'm a former school board member. My job was to see to the well-being of all the school district, all the students in that school district. And when we make policy that says we're going to give special treatment and special protections and special rights and privileges to a very, very small set, a subset of the students, to the exclusion of the others, and perhaps I would maintain for sure, to jeopardizing their well-being and their constitutional right to privacy in places where you can should be reasonably likely to expect privacy, that is wrong for me as a school board member to pass those policies. So I would argue if I were on that Eau Claire school board, that policy is not working out that well.
The proposal that you have before you today balances the budget without raising taxes. It puts an additional $514 million into the general aid formula, while implementing Superintendent Evers' fair funding proposal that ensures equal treatment for all districts.
The Senate continues to have the position of relying on bonding to fund transportation, even at an increased amount over the governor, and our caucus position is solidly against that. So I think that's going to be the biggest stumbling block moving forward in passing a budget.
We have caucused on transportation more than anything else in this budget as Assembly Republicans, so I am very confident where our caucus is at, and they have said that we are not going to continue to borrow and spend without a long-term answer to say, how are we going to afford to pay this money back?
A lot of news this week, and Jason, my nominee for Story of the Week is the decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday. Number one, we are going to hear the challenge to the legislative district lines Republicans drew in 2011. Number two, we're going to stay the lower court order,
right,
the gun to the head of Republicans to redraw those lines by November 1.
Right.
Were you surprised that the Supreme Court, either of those actions?
No, I was definitely not surprised that they're having a hearing on the case because it's so far-reaching, and you know there was this lower court decision that was a unique and decision of sweeping importance, right? That would have potentially led to challenges around the country if it is upheld, yes, by the Supreme Court. But then obviously you have the stay, and that was definitely a warning sign for Democrats in this case that it may not work out the way that they had hoped.
It seems to be a clear attempt to influence one of the nine Supreme Court justices,
right,
Anthony Kennedy. Kennedy has said in 2004 that there may be a standard by which we could void or overturn gerrymandering based on political partisanship.
Right.
Now, the court has made clear we're going to overturn, as it did in North Carolina. When you gerrymander and it hurts minorities, we're going to bounce those.
Right. That is what is the established system, right? The established standard, which is to protect key vulnerable groups like racial minorities, make sure that when redistrict lines are drawn for legislative congressional races every 10 years, that those groups don't lose out on representation. But this is a completely novel argument that says, beyond that, we think that this has violated the rights of a political group, of yes. Democrats as a political party, and you could have the opposite in some other state of Republicans. And as you say, Kennedy said more than a decade ago that he could imagine there would be some sort of redistricting case which was so egregious that that would happen. But we've never had a court say, yep, this is it. This is a standard that, you know, a plaintiff has brought forward and we agree with, and it's a standard for deciding that rights have been violated. These plaintiffs have come up with a very novel standard, but whether the court will, you know, will weigh in on that, so far, the court appears to be skeptical of yeah. that argument.
But it was so intriguing to me. We'll listen to a UW law prof and Attorney General Schimmel in a minute. But when Kennedy joined the order staying, Republican legislators in Wisconsin, you do not have to redraw lines by November 1.
Right.
How telling is that? Was he just saying, I want to hear the arguments in this case, and I will eventually adopt this new standard, which right. potentially could throw out partisan gerrymandering, I right. think, in 12 or 13 different states? Or was he just saying, Wisconsin, don't redraw it November 1. I'm eventually not going to go to this new standard. It's absolutely fascinating.
Right. It was not conclusive, but it was telling
right.
that Kennedy sided with the majority in ordering the stay, because you did have this lower court ruling saying, you have got to move forward. Republican legislators, you guys have got to move forward quickly to redraw these lines to be ready for the 2018 elections with new lines, because we feel that you violated the constitutional rights of Democrats. This right. is the court's. And you have a majority on the Supreme Court with this key vote from Kennedy saying, hold on, guys, hold on. We're going to take a look at this, and nobody move until we get back to you. And so clearly they could still uphold the lower court ruling, but the fact that Kennedy voted to stay is a telling detail.
Right, and let's spend a little bit more time on this. Let's go to the reactions of UW-Madison political science and law professor Ryan Owens and some comments from Attorney General Schimmel the day that the Supreme Court issued its rulings.
So what the court did today is it decided to hear this case. But at the same time, it did impose a stay on the lower court's decision. And that's pretty significant, because what it means is the district court's ruling in the case is basically put on hold. And it's significant for this reason, because the court doesn't often issue these stays. And when it does, it's a pretty strong signal that they disagreed with the lower court's decision.
It's very important for a lot of states that we get some guidance on this, because this the decision made by the lower court panel is unique, to strike down a political redistricting where there are no allegations of racial bias in this one. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece, important piece, was that they issued a stay, because otherwise, while the Supreme Court is hearing arguments and issuing a decision on the case, we would have the Wisconsin legislature redrawing maps potentially for no reason whatsoever. If the court upholds the lower court decision here, our legislature would have to move very quickly to take whatever standards the U.S. Supreme Court applies or issues and apply those to drawing new redistricting maps, and they'd have to move very quickly. It would change some people who represent a particular district now might find them a man or a woman without a district.
Jason, I think this raises three questions that are left unanswered. Number one, when will the U.S. Supreme Court rule? Now, we both heard that the U.S. Supreme Court could hear oral arguments in October, but they don't have to issue a ruling in this case until the end of their next term, May or June. Okay, right. Point one. Number two, would the court, as General Schimmel alluded, would it potentially come out in the spring and order mm-hmm. that Wisconsin draw new lines for the November of 2018 elections, which would be a huge deal? People would, the Elections Commission would have to make people aware, this is your new
right.
potential legislators. Right. And finally, what's your thoughts on how much defending our current boundaries is going to cost you and I as Wisconsin taxpayers?
Right.
So any thoughts on those three questions?
Sure. Well, the Supreme Court will rule when it's ready, when it's good and ready. So that's an easy one.
That's true.
No one tells those guys what to do, and gals. And the other issue is in terms of when the district, could they still order something for November 2018? Sure they could. Sure they could. Again, I think right now all the indications would be that they overturn. But if they uphold the lower court's decision, there could absolutely be a fire drill here where lawmakers have
good
to
term.
Come up with these boundaries very quickly. And then, in terms of what it's going to cost Wisconsin taxpayers, I think the French word is beaucoup. It's going to be expensive. And this is a national case that potentially could write new federal law, and any state that's held by one party, whether it's Republican or Democrat, is looking at this case, very carefully. Believe me.
Story of the week. Biggest story of the week?
Oh, yes. Okay. I mean, it's and particularly, if the lower court were upheld, this would be a national story of tremendous significance.
But potentially, the U.S. Supreme Court would have to decide every redistricting of every state based on a new standard partisan gerrymandering. Okay, enough on that. While we're talking about courts, the state Supreme Court voted 5-2 to close its rules conferences.
Right.
Now, during that session, and we're going to hear part of it in a minute, there was a memo written by the late Justice Crooks saying, "Congratulations, Justice Abramson, on your 1999 win. I suggest we experiment with open courts. 5-2, though, they closed the rules conferences with Justice Rogensack, Grassel Bradley, Gableman Kelly, Ziegler voting to close, and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley and former Chief Justice Abramson. Any surprises that they're shutting down this 1999 experiment?
No. I mean, I don't think, and I will say later, I think the evidence or the argument for why the conservatives on the court want to shut down the conferences is there for all to see in the discussion, in the debate they had on the decision, which was, very, it was a prickly.
Let's go to that. And it's interesting. Justice Gableman brought the motion 5 or 6 days after he announced he will not be seeking re-election in April.
Right.
But as Jason alluded to, you really have to watch this video of our Supreme Court, the debate, but watch the lack of collegiality. Watch the body language, but especially watch Justice Gableman referring to the 2011 incident where former Justice Prosser allegedly put his arms around the neck of Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. This is powerful stuff, but it's our court in action. Let's watch.
So I would make the motion that we return the rules conferences to their traditional state and in conformity with the other 49 states in the union, conclude the experiment in the open conferences and return them to closed.
What are people afraid of? You don't want to be in public? Shame on all of you.
Yeah, shame on you, Anne.
Yeah. Okay.
And shortly after the
where did you get
victory?
Those are all internal. The private. The one that you just
they're
started
private?
To read.
Miss Sunshine?
No.
Let's open it to the public, Sunshine?
Let me see this, Mike. Where did you get these?
I'm reading the motion. You were here at the time, man. Don't grab papers from me.
Justice,
please.
Ann Walsh
Bradley,
please be seated.
Good heavens, Ann.
I just want to see.
Have you lost leave? And Ann, I take great exception to you attempting to reach over and physically come over to me, something which you complained about when another justice did that to you.
So all those in favor of the pending motion, please raise your hand.
I suggest we have a hearing.
Okay, those opposed to the motion, please raise your hand. Okay, the motion passes.
Any closing thoughts on that on this subject? I mean, you have the Chief Justice ordering a justice to sit down.
It was a remarkable exchange. I mean, there's really two sides to this. Most other states do not have these conferences open.
That's true.
So Wisconsin was an outlier. You know, at the same time, it provided transparency. You know, in this particular instance, I think it provided some transparency of lingering sort of difficult sentiments within that court and interpersonal relations. But at the same time, Justice Gableman is leaving the court. The court will then be a majority of members who were not present during sort of these most difficult times in 2011 and earlier. And so it'll be interesting to see if there's a new dynamic on the court as it starts to just have kind of natural turnover.
Yeah. And just a closing thought, should Gableman leave early before his term is up in August of next year, Governor Walker would be in a position to appoint a third member of a seven-member court.
Who would then be able to run for election
next April,
as a sitting justice.
As an incumbent.
Yes.
But the last indication was that Justice Gableman intended to fill out his term.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, the Assembly went first on the Freedom of Speech Bill for the UW system. And let's walk through some of the provisions. The regents must adopt students' free speech policy. The policy would discipline, quote, violent or other disorderly conduct that disrupts the free expression of others. Repeat offenders would face suspension for one semester, or expulsion after, I think, a third violation.
That's right.
And an investigation could be open if not one, but two people. Now, we're going to listen to the very emotional debate on this. You and I both graduated from the UW-Madison here a few blocks away.
We're both Badgers.
Yeah. What are your impressions on this effort by conservatives to say we must mandate freedom of speech codes on the 26 UW system campuses?
You know, the thing that struck me, I don't think it's something that you're ever going to see used a lot, but it certainly brings out passionate, deeply held beliefs on both sides, and you'll see that in the video. And I think that this is something that we'll continue to wrestle with in the legislature and we'll probably wrestle with it in the courts if it becomes law.
Well, I'm also reminded it travels, part of this issue travels with the provision in the state budget, which is, we'll get to that in a minute, it's far from done, $1.5 million a year to set up a Tommy Thompson Leadership Center. So
right.
this may
which
be...
Which would bring on more conservative, probably bring more conservative speakers to campus than are currently coming. And that is sort of the rub for Republican lawmakers.
Yeah, you alluded to the emotional speech on this subject. So now we're going to hear a clip from the sponsor, Representative Jesse Kramer, supporting Democrat Chris Taylor opposing, Democrat Fred Kessler of Milwaukee opposing. Closing remarks by the Speaker of the Assembly. Let's listen to the emotional tone on the campus free speech code adopted by the Assembly.
But this is rather a proactive piece of legislation at the behest of the regents, faculty, students, and constituents to ensure that every viewpoint can be expressed and we do not arrive at the precipice of a riotous and potentially dangerous shout-down situation on our campuses. It is imperative that our institutions of higher education remain the free marketplace of ideas as intended, where truths and facts can be debated, not shut up, openly and freely, civilly and respectfully, without the fear of peer-on-peer harassment, quid pro quo sexual harassment, or true threat to inflict harm so pervasive that it deprives the victim access to the educational opportunities or benefits of the institution.
Conceivably, yes, you could be expelled for shouting out three times during somebody's speech. You don't get expelled. This legislature hasn't mandated that you get expelled when you're a serial rapist, but you shout out three times and you interrupt somebody's speech and you could be expelled.
These rights were actually affirmed in the decisions that came as a result of a group of Nazis who wanted to march in Skokie, Illinois, a community that's 40% Jewish and has a number of Holocaust victims in it. It's not the job of a university to monitor free speech. It's the job of law enforcement. If the Nazis wanted to march and the protesters wanted to protest and also have a counter march, it's law enforcement's job to keep them separate and preserve their rights.
My job is to kind of be the truth police, to make sure that people understand what's actually in this bill and what is not in this bill. So let me start by saying that this bill is about free speech. It's about making sure that every single student has the right to hear people that they are interested in listening to. It means that we are not going to allow a small minority on campus to shout down the ability of other students to listen and to learn and to be circumspect about what they are seeing on a college campus. It means that we are going to become the first in the nation to actually have the strongest protections for free speech in the entire country.
I think comments from Chris Taylor indicate we'll soon see a lawsuit. But my quick final question on this issue, Jason, you expect the Senate to quickly act and also pass it, put it on Governor Walker's desk?
I don't expect the Senate to do one thing or the other in the sense that it's uncertain to me what the Senate will do. And I think if they act, I don't think it would be unexpected if they make some changes to this legislation. So I think this debate is very much ongoing, and I think the fate of this bill is very much to be determined.
Okay. Next subject. In what was its last non-budget session for June, the Assembly had, I counted, 42 bills on its calendar on Wednesday. I think you drew the long shift. You didn't get out of there till close to 2 a.m.
That's correct.
But let's look at, we can only list a few of the items. So the Representative Clayfish bill would make, if you create a derivative from fentanyl, which kills.
A chemical analog, a similar drug.
Thank you.
Yes.
That would make that illegal. But the changes on recounts, remember Jill Stein, who finished, 40 points out of the presidential?
Correct. I mean, had a fraction of the vote, was able to fundraise more than $3 million, pay for a recount, and, it rubbed Republicans the wrong way. They passed a bill to say, look, if you want to have a recount, you've got to be within, I think, a percentage
Within 1%
in most elections.
If more than 4,000 votes are cast in that election.
That's right.
And they made card skimmers illegal. That wasn't.
Right. So, these are the things that thieves would use at gas stations to grab your cell phone number.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But they also, in action, I think the vote was taken at 115, prohibited pre-existing conditions and health care. You were there for that.
That was a little bit of parliamentary theater there.
Right. So now let's go. Let's listen to, first of all, they also woodchuck hunting season. So we're going to hear a little bit on that, and we're going to hear recounts argued by a proponent and Mr. Barca. And then finally, the very powerful personal narrative of first-term Democratic Representative Jimmy Anderson.
By the way, woodchucks do not chuck wood. That phrase goes, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if? So a woodchuck does not chuck wood.
Why haven't we limited these recounts in the past? I think truthfully, we never really thought anybody would be stupid enough to spend $2.5 million to recount an election that they lost by over 1 million votes. So that's probably one of the reasons. We talked about whether about protecting people from Wisconsin. Jill Stein is not from Wisconsin. I don't know anybody from Wisconsin who's ever asked for a recall of this type. They talked about creating jobs. This is ridiculous. A job for somebody to recount votes for 2 weeks? This is a jobs program? I think you better come up with something better than that. This is really silly.
But every single intelligence agency has come out and said that they have interfered with our elections. So what is the recourse? I don't understand. What is the issue here? If people are willing to pay on their own, their hard-earned money, or they're willing to pay because they're supporters, the gentleman from from the Oshkosh area, all his supporters said, look, we want you to do this. We'll contribute. Let's do a recount. I'm sure the Russians were in Oshkosh. I saw some Russians in Oshkosh. I'm pretty sure they were kind of interfering with some of these machines, in fact.
I'd like to share my personal story just to give a good example of what happened to me and what happened to people all across the country. It was just about a little under 7 years ago when a drunk driver killed my mother, my father, my little brother, and put me in this wheelchair. And it was shortly after my spine was fused by a surgeon that I got a letter from my insurance company, despite playing by the rules and paying my premiums on time. And they said that I was nearing my lifetime maximums and that I was going to be kicked off my health insurance and I was going to be expected to pay in the short term tens of thousands of dollars for my rehabilitation and millions of dollars for health care for the rest of my life. As a student at the time, there was no way I was going to be able to afford to pay for that. And I knew at that moment that my life was over, that I was going to be financially bankrupt, and I'd drop out of school, try to find a job to try to make ends meet. I didn't know what to do. It was 2 days later that we got a letter in the mail saying that the provisions of the Affordable Care Act have kicked in and got rid of those lifetime maximums. And it was the most freeing moment of my life. As I often tell people, it's what gave me hope. It's what gave me the opportunity to put my life back together. And it's the reason I'm here today. So I would hope you would support my motion to take it up at this time, because without it, I wouldn't be your colleague, and who wouldn't want that?
Jason, you covered that debate. So the way it played out, correct me if I'm wrong, the Republicans called up a Democrat bill that would say no health insurer could impose a limit on coverage. The Republicans then
put in an amendment for
thank
the whole
you
bill.
For fixing me, that said no pre-existing conditions. So that's pretty sleight of hand. I mean,
tried to force a vote on a bill that they wanted to on lifetime limits. Republicans said, "You want to force a vote? Fine, but we have
Kevin
something
Peterson
that we'd
and
like
San
to vote
Filippo
on."
Pulled out this,
and so then they put in a bill rewriting the rules in the state for dealing with people with pre-existing conditions.
But it is uncertain.
All this at 1 a.m. So it was a.
But it's going to be the federal government that writes some of these rules. So there's a real question what effect a state bill would.
We have to wait and see what happens with the repeal of Obamacare, and then we'll see, what the state of Wisconsin will or won't do.
Okay. Now, a couple of minutes left. Let's talk about the stalemate on the budget. No joint finance meeting this week.
Right.
They negotiated on K-12 and tax codes. Didn't even get to transportation finance.
Or taxes is also hanging out there.
Right. So we will not have a budget by the July 1 deadline, which is kind of meaningless because state government goes on. But what are your thoughts on the impasse here?
They will be late. I think there's still a chance that they can get done in the kind of time frame that you typically see from lawmakers, which they often drag
July 15 or something.
Right, that's right. But again, the fact that they have control of government and have been unable to, often you do see split control and parties able to reach an agreement in this kind of time frame. So the fact that Republicans themselves cannot agree on what to do is significant, and it is unusual.
Well, but what I found most intriguing from the Voss-Nygren press conference is Nygren, co-chairman of finance, says the Senate Republicans. Let's set it up this way. In February, Governor Walker said, let's borrow $500 million to protect highway construction.
Right.
Let's pay for those from the transportation fund.
Right.
Now, Nygren said, Senate
so
Republicans...
So let's pay off those loans with gas tax money.
Thank you. But now, Representative Nygren says, the Senate Republicans want to borrow even more.
Right.
How much more, Jason?
An additional $350 million, and they would pay off those loans using income and sales taxes, money that typically goes for schools and healthcare.
Okay, so they want to bond even more, and that is a non-starter with Assembly Republicans.
It is.
They're even further apart on transportation funding.
They are. I mean, they really, and I think, they're not that far apart. If you said to them, your life depends on getting a deal today, I think they could get one. But if you don't want to get a deal, then it really doesn't matter how far apart you are. And that's kind of where they're at right now.
That's true. Okay. Final subject is Sheriff Clark had announced on a conservative radio show he'd be going to the Department of Homeland security.
Right.
And he
said
a month ago, and then he said he's not going to take that job.
Right.
Now he posts on his Facebook, "I will be sheriff until January 2019 at a minimum." However, someone who's close to the sheriff said that the sheriff is reviewing his options inside and outside of government. Closing thoughts for the show on Sheriff Clark?
Well, it looks like, you know, we'll be writing about him for some time to come, because it appears as if he'll continue to be in Milwaukee. We'll stay tuned.
It's interesting. Okay, I have a trivia question. Who issued a press release this week saying, "Party like it's 1999.
That would be the governor of the great state of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, who wants to call attention to the fact that the unemployment rate is very, very low. It's almost at 3%. Now, there are other economic indicators that are not as favorable, but that one is extremely favorable. It's almost at full employment. And you'll hear a lot from the governor about that statistic.
Home run on my trivia question. I'm Steve Walders.
I'm Jason Stein.
I want to thank Jason for sitting in for JR. That's Rewind for June 23.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.